Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 7, Chapter entitled Further Inquiries by Vidura, text number 39. Nimittani chatasyeha.
Nimittani chatasyeha.
Proktanyannaka suribhi. Svato jnanam kuta pumsam.
Svato jnanam kuta pumsam.
Bhaktir vairagyam eva va.
Bhaktir vairagyam eva va. Bhaktir vairagyam eva
va. Nimittani.
Nimittani.
The source of knowledge.
The source of knowledge.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Tasya.
Tashya,
of such knowledge.
Of such knowledge.
Iha.
Iha.
In this world.
In this world.
Proktani.
Proktani.
Mentioned.
Mentioned.
Anaka.
Anaka.
Spotless.
Spotless.
Suribhi.
Suribhi.
By devotees.
By devotees.
Swata.
Swata.
Self-sufficient.
Self-sufficient.
Jnanam.
Jnanam.
Knowledge.
Knowledge.
Kuta.
Kuta.
How.
How.
Pumsam.
Pumsam.
Of the living entity.
Of the living entity.
Bhakti.
Bhakti.
Devotional service.
Devotional service.
Vairagyam.
Vairagyam.
Detachment.
Detachment.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Va.
Va.
Also.
Also.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
Right.
Spotless devotees of the Lord have mentioned the source of such knowledge. How could one have knowledge of devotional service and detachment without the help of such devotees? Translation responsibly. Spotless devotees of the Lord.
Spotless devotees of the Lord.
Have mentioned the source of such knowledge.
Have mentioned the source of such knowledge.
How could one have knowledge of devotional service?
How could one have knowledge of devotional service?
And detachment.
And detachment.
Without the help of such devotees.
Without the help of such devotees.
Purport. Can you just turn the volume just down? Just a touch. Just a little bit. There are many inexperienced persons who advocate self-realization without the help of a spiritual master. They decry the necessity of a spiritual master and try themselves to take his place by propagating the theory that a spiritual master is not necessary. Srimad Bhagavatam, however, does not approve this viewpoint. Even the great transcendental scholar Vyasadeva had need of a spiritual master. And under the instruction of his spiritual master, Narada, he prepared this sublime literature, Srimad Bhagavatam. Even Lord Chaitanya, although he is Krishna himself, accepted a spiritual master. Even Lord Krishna accepted a spiritual master, Sandipani Muni. In order to be enlightened, and all the acharyas and saints of the world had spiritual masters. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna accepted Lord Krishna as his spiritual master, although there was no necessity of such a formal declaration. So in all cases, the only stipulation is that the spiritual master should be bona fide. Sorry. So in all cases, there is no question about the necessity of accepting a spiritual master. The only stipulation is that the spiritual master should be bona fide, i.e., the spiritual master must be in the proper chain of disciplic succession, called the parampara system. Suris are great scholars, but they may not always be anaka, or spotless. The anaga suri is one who is a pure devotee of the Lord. Those who are not pure devotees of the Lord, or who want to be on an equal level with him, are not anaga suri. Pure devotees have prepared many books of knowledge on the basis of authorized scriptures. Srila Rupa Goswami and his assistants, under the instructions of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, have all written various literatures for the guidance of prospective devotees. And anyone who is very serious about raising himself to the standard of a pure devotee of the Lord must take advantage of those literatures. Omagyan Timidandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaya Dadati Swabhadantikam Vancha Kaupata Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhivacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, Prabhupada is emphatically declaring here and explaining that in order to progress in spiritual life, the system is you need a guru, a bona fide spiritual master. Now, many people these days in spiritual circles, they like to say that to advance in spiritual life, you don't need a guru. That you can just rely on yourself, or everything will be illuminated from within. Even recently, I was speaking to one person. They were saying like this. We had a Sunday feast at the farm, and someone was saying that you can just rely on the guru within, or your own intuition, or spiritual enlightenment will come from within. But basically, there's no school of knowledge on the earth where that is the case. You know, I mean, you look at Melbourne University or any university in the world, you don't just go to the class and the teacher says to you, just sit here in the classroom and everything will just come. You know, you'll just find illumination. You know, just look at the blackboard and everything will be revealed. You know, everything will just manifest, you know, from the blackboard. You know, the blackboard will give you all knowledge, all realization of the subject matter. You know, you don't have to study brain surgery. You know, if you want to be a brain surgeon, it will just come. It'll just enter in your heart and you'll just know how to cut someone's scalp. You know, and then, you know, remove their cranium. And then you'll be able to find the part of the brain which is necessary. And you'll be able to, you know, it's not possible. It's ridiculous. So no one would accept that. And then suddenly, and this is the nature of Kali Yuga, actually. Suddenly we come to spiritual life and it's all just within. It's all just in you. You know, which in one sense it's true. It's all in us because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. Krishna Prema is Nitya. Nitya means it's already in you. Just like one time Prabhupada arrived at the airport and he would always be interviewed when he came to the airports. And then one reporter said to Prabhupada, "What have you come to our country for?" I think it was England. I can't remember, but he came. And they said, "Why have you come to our country?" Prabhupada said, "I have come to teach you that which you have forgotten." In other words, it's already in there. Krishna consciousness is already in there, but it needs to be evoked. It needs to come out. So, it's true in one sense that everything is within us, but the process of bringing it out, you have to follow the most... Or actually, there is no other way. You have to follow the process, which is to accept an instructor, a guru. Now, the nature of Kali Yuga is people do not have faith. If you go back to chapter 7 of the first canto, then Srila Vyasadeva, he writes the Bhagavatam. What happens in chapter 4, 5, and 6 of the first canto? Does anyone remember? Yeah, Narada and Vyas. So we have a description of Narada from his previous life. We have a description of him approaching Vyasadeva. He looks despondent. He's instructed. Right? And then, sorry, it's the other way around. Narada becomes enlightened. And once he becomes guru, he becomes qualified. Then Vyasadeva is approached by Narada. Vyasadeva is seen by Narada to be despondent. He doesn't know what his purpose is. what he is, even though he's compiled all the Vedas, which is a vast literature, it's voluminous literature. Everything's been compiled. But still, he's not satisfied. He feels despondent. Just like, and Prabhupada explains, the face is the index of the mind. Right? We just look at your face and we can see what's going on in your mind. We just look at you and then we can understand. Are you having a good day? Are you having a bad day? Are you happy? Are you distressed? Are you mental? What is your state of consciousness? That is on the face. So when Narada, when he saw Vyas, he saw that he's not satisfied. Even though he's done so much work for the benefit of humanity, still he is not feeling completely satisfied. So therefore he said, "Is it that you have not exclusively described a scripture which spotlessly describes the glories of Lord Krishna? And have you not spoken about Uttama Bhakti, or pure devotional service to Krishna?" So understanding this, he contemplated. So in the beginning of chapter 7, then Vyasadeva, he begins to contemplate. He goes into meditation. This is something we need to learn. The Bhagavatam teaches us something at every step. Every shloka, Prabhupada even says, every word, we have instructions. And you have to contemplate. It is called, when we study very deeply the Bhagavatam, it is called, what is the Sanskrit for that? Swajaya. Swajaya, swa. Swa means your own, yourself. Jaya. Jaya means meditate or focus. When you study, you're meant to be meditating or focusing on yourself. In other words, purifying your consciousness. In other words, analyzing your heart or your consciousness. What's going on inside of me? This is what we're meant to do when we're studying. That's why Prabhupada emphasized we must study his books. Prabhupada said 1 or 2 hours a day we must read his books. Hands up if you're reading Prabhupada's books for 1 or 2 hours a day. 1, 1.5, 2, 3. That's it. Okay. So Prabhupada said that's what we should be doing. I've upped my reading recently. I'm reading about an hour a day at the moment, like that, because I wasn't doing that regularly. And I'm noticing the benefit. It's like drinking sugarcane juice. You with me? That time we had the sugarcane juice at Govardhan Hill. Yeah, we did that parakram. Yeah, we had sugarcane juice together. Was that me and you? Yeah, that's good, huh? Yeah. That's good, huh? How many cups did we have? Wrong, 4. You know, one time I drank 14 cups. 14 cups sugar and juice. Like bang, bang, bang. It's 14 cups of that. I can still do it, but I drank 4 cups. We drank 4 cups, right? It was a kadashi. Yeah, so we drank 4 cups. Right? We were controlling our senses. So, sugar cane juice. You drink sugar cane juice, you feel invigorated like that. Or doot, milk. And you get pure milk, and you take pure milk, and then you feel invigorated. Actually, it says, this is interesting, that in Ayurveda, it says that if you are, if you need to replenish, in other words, if your health is down, if you're feeling a little weak, does anyone feel like that? All the people in the Hare Krishna movement, right? Feeling a little weak. Actually, it says in Ayurveda, if you can get pure cow's milk, you just take 1 cup of pure cow's milk. In 24 hours, your entire system can be replenished. Now, that is the potency of doot, pure milk, like that. So anyway, very, very, how do you say it, like, political situation at the moment, the drinking of milk. It's true. On the weekend at the farm, we had 30 vegans. Geelong Vegan Society came to the farm. And basically, you know, I was giving the lecture. Have you seen the fights, the boxing matches between Muhammad Ali and, you know, he used to sit on the ropes like that sits. You know. So I was sitting on the ropes, and like 30 of them just going bang, 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 bang. Like, I was like, you know, ducking and weaving. Because they had very good points. I have very good points. And that's what I said to them. I said, I agree with many of your points. I do. I agree. And many of the members of the Hare Krishna movement actually follow ahimsa. They're actually vegan. They only drink milk from bona fide sources. So it's a serious issue. It's a contentious issue. We need to address it seriously, take it seriously. But still, I was saying that based on the Vedas, the drinking of milk is extremely beneficial. Extremely beneficial. If you can get pure milk, hard to get, milk straight from the cow these days, a protected cow, but you can get, there's an organic milk that I drink, Parmalate, from the supermarket, but it's very powerful. And sometimes you're feeling your health is down, you get a glass of milk, offer it to Krishna, and then you take that, and then can replenish your health. So, that's what it's like studying the Bhagavad Gita. That's why Prabhupada said we should read his books 1 to 2 hours a day, because it replenishes your health. If you're feeling unenthusiastic in devotional service, what does that mean? You're not reading Prabhupada's books enough. That's what it means. Because if you're reading Prabhupada's books, you will always feel enthusiastic. Always. And the problem is you're not reading. Prabhupada once said, he may have even said it here in Melbourne, he said, if I have one criticism of my disciples, it is they do not read my books enough. He said that. But devotees don't read Prabhupada's books enough. Right. But if you read Prabhupada's books, you cannot be unenthusiastic in devotional service, because it is like drinking sugarcane juice, or it is like drinking. The Bhagavad Gita says it is the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. What is the king of the fruits? It is the mango. In the fifth canto, it says in the heavenly planets, there are rivers of mango juice. Right? The mangoes are so big in the heavenly planets, they drop on the ground, and then they create rivers of mango nectar. Right, and the demigods just go and take a cup, and they just pick up that mango drink and just drink that mango nectar. And how do you feel? Completely revitalized. So if you read the Bhagavad Gita, study it in the mood of swajaya. Swajaya means self-study. Right? We study ourselves while we're reading. Right? And I see, Prabhupada says in the third chapter of the first canto, he says that when you study, you have to reflect on yourself. And you have to see, do I have lust? Do I have anger? Do I have greed? Do I have envy? Do I have pride in my consciousness? Right? And you have to remove those things and make conscientious effort to change your mentality, your behavior. That's why we have to reflect on ourselves. Because what is the symptom of an advanced devotee? Symptom of an advanced devotee is he does not use the phone in the Bhagavad Gita class. That is actually the symptom of the advanced function. Does not. We should ban them from the Bhagavad Gita classes. It's not bona fide to use the phone. What's that?
All Prabhupada's books.
Yeah, that's okay. But still, when we're listening to Bhagavad Gita class, we should not be on the phone. It is not symptomatic of rapt attention. Prabhupada says when you hear the Bhagavad Gita, you should hear with rapt attention. Like that. If you're doing something else, then obviously you're not in rapt attention. Like that. So it has to be. You have to be conscientious. So when we are studying Prabhupada's book, then we should be analysing what is there within our consciousness, what is there within our heart, what are we doing, what are we meditate, and then we have to purify ourselves and improve ourselves to the point that we understand who we actually are. And we have to understand what is going on in our consciousness and understand what are the defects that are there within our consciousness and remove those defects. So it says within the Nectar of Instruction, what is the symptom of the advanced Vaishnava? Upadeshamrita, the Nectar of Instruction. What is the symptom of the advanced devotee? Interesting, because Rupa Goswami, when he analyzes an advanced state of consciousness, he says an Uttama Adhikari, or a very advanced devotee, then what does he say? He's free from the propensity to criticize others. Right? That is the symptom of an advanced Vaishnava. Right? He's free from the propensity to criticize other people. So that should be the consciousness that we're striving for. Right? We're free from that propensity. So we look in ourselves as devotees, what do we see? Do we have the propensity to criticize other devotees? No? Do we look for faults in other devotees? Do we think improper thoughts about other devotees? Do we think improper thoughts and do we say improper things about other devotees? Do we criticize and do we act improperly towards other devotees? So when you study the Bhagavatam very deeply, you have to analyze your consciousness and you have to see, am I free from these faults? Or do I have these, do I have this propensity? So the Bhagavatam is meant for self-study. We're meant to look at ourselves and we're meant to see, is this my consciousness? Now, what is my consciousness? Do I need to improve? Do I need to purify myself? So it is said that as Vyasadeva was compiling the Bhagavad for the benefit of all of humanity in the beginning of the seventh chapter, right, then he meditated very deeply. And while he was meditating very deeply, what did he see? He saw Krishna. And what else did he see? Maya. Yeah, he saw the material energy and he saw Krishna. And then he saw Kali Yuga was coming. And when he meditated on Kali Yuga, what does this specifically say that he saw? Right. When he saw Kali Yuga was just beginning, and Vyasadeva saw Kali Yuga, and what was the... because it writes in the Bhagavatam, one point specifically, that he saw, and that he saw as the symptom of Kali Yuga. What was that? Always disturbed. Yeah, that's back in the first chapter of in the 10th or 11th verse. It says that above all, people are always disturbed. But particularly, he saw that people lack faith. They don't have Shraddha. That is the nature of Kali Yuga. People do not have Shraddha. They do not have faith. Faith is destroyed at every step in Kali Yuga. Right? Just like if you have a relationship with someone, right? You think of people that you relate to in this world. And if someone is always telling you lies, right, and is when they say something, you don't know if they're going to fulfill their promise, and you don't know if what they say is actually true, and most of the time you know that what they say is not true, then would you keep that relationship with that person? Right? So what I've just described is the nature of politics in Kali Yuga. Right? So you have people, and we know when they make their promises at election time, most people know they're going to break the promise. So what sort of a relationship is that? Right? If you're having a relationship with an individual in this world, would you keep that relationship? Right? You won't keep the relationship. Right? Immediately you'll cut the relationship. And yet we're expecting in Kali Yuga to have relationships with politicians. We don't even trust them. People don't trust politicians. Like, we all know they're going to break their promises, right? So this is the nature of Kali Yuga, the very fabric of society and the air of confidence in society, it is not there. You know, people don't have an air of confidence in Kali Yuga. Right? They don't have trust or faith in people in Kali Yuga, in other people. So it is broken down. And especially at this point in time, people, if you look at the media, if you look at the newspapers or the radio or the television regularly, then what do you see? Don't sit right in the doorway. People can't go through. So what do you see? Practically every time you open the news at the moment, what's on the news? Right? It's some religious leaders who have been taken to court. And they had a royal commission recently in Australia about child abuse within spiritual and religious organisations. Right? So people don't have faith in religion, in spirituality, in these things anymore. This is the nature of Kali Yuga. That's why the whole philosophy is there now in Kali Yuga. Just find it within yourself. Because you can't trust someone else. Like that. Because the nature of Kali Yuga, just our trust gets broken down. People, sometimes they lose trust with their parents. Right? When someone loses trust with their parents through some sort of abuse, psychological, physical, whatever it may be, some sort of sexual, whatever the abuse is, then people lose faith in relationships and life. And it's very hard to trust authority. And that's the nature of Kali Yuga. We're dealing with that continuously. Right? There's so much abuse going on so many different levels now in Kali Yuga that everyone is losing their faith in other people, and especially within authority. And in Vedic culture, the whole Vedic culture is based upon one very important point. Several points, but one point is very important. And what is that point?
Accepting the spiritual
Or accepting authority. Right? Vedic culture is very much based on authority. Respect for authorities, authority figures. So, in the nature of Kali Yuga, people lose respect for authority figures. And they feel like, I cannot trust this person, I cannot trust that person. And then they think that I don't need a guru, because really I cannot trust the person anyway. So that breaks down the entire fabric. So, even in ISKCON, we've had problems, and we've had a schism or a split within ISKCON, and now we have a Ritvik movement. Everyone's familiar with the Ritvik movement? Ritvik means that you don't have to accept a living guru. Prabhupada can be your guru. And there's a whole movement. They've kind of broken off for ISKCON. You know, they're ISKCON devotees, and they've kind of broken off into... It's a big movement. Especially in India, it's quite established. And people think that you just accept Prabhupada as the guru, right? And we don't need to have a living guru. And that's the philosophy, and that's how they... They got great devotion to Prabhupada, but they won't accept Prabhupada's followers as guru. And the reason that is there is because they've been let down by many of the gurus in the first 20, 30 years of ISKCON. There were some problems there. And then people say, I cannot trust. I can only trust Prabhupada. Right? But Prabhupada clearly states here that you have to have a living guru. He says clearly, and he says that everyone had a living guru. And that is our philosophy. And that's why it is necessary that when we become leaders ourselves in ISKCON, because many of us are leaders, right? We may not be Diksha gurus or initiating spiritual masters, but we may be Shiksha gurus, or we may be leaders, or we may be inspiring devotees. It is important that the devotees, their faith and their trust is not broken. Because as soon as faith and trust is broken in Kali Yuga, it's very difficult for people to get it back. So it is extremely important that we act properly. So therefore, Sanatana Goswami said, when he was speaking to Haridas Thakur, he said, you are a perfect acharya. And he said, what were the two qualities of someone being a perfect acharya? Yeah, he's acha and he's pracha. You speak perfectly, you act perfectly. Right? And for people to have confidence and faith in us, they have to see these two things. They have to see that we act properly. We actually do what we say, right? Just like, I say to devotees, don't use the mobile phone in the Bhagavatam class, right? And then if you see me, like tomorrow, and I'm sitting there, I'm going like, like that, then what are you going to think? No, you're going to think, well, this guy, he's not, why do I have to do it? Right? So we have to practice what we preach, right? If we're going to instruct others, right, then we also have to do that thing. Right? And then it becomes potent. So Prabhupada said in ISKCON, what is the force? Purity. Right? Purity. It means that you have to be transparent. You have to do what you say. Right? If you preach one thing, you also have to act on that level. So that is the nature of Krishna consciousness. And that is how our movement expands and spreads, and that's how people get faith. So it is the most important thing within ISKCON, for ISKCON to be established and to go forward, for devotees to be good role models. That devotees have to have love and trust between them. If you go back to pre-1970, so Prabhupada started the movement in 1965, right? And 66, he started to initiate disciples, and the first disciples came. So up until about 68, right, there were only about 80 full-time devotees in ISKCON, mainly in America. Right? So Prabhupada would regularly write letters to everyone. Sometimes Prabhupada would write to someone. Because he only had 80 disciples. So then he would write a letter. I haven't heard from you. How are you doing? Like that. but as ISKCON went past 1970, then there became 1,000 followers, then 2,000 and 5,000. Prabhupada had many, many disciples. So at that point in time, ISKCON was different. The dynamic was different. And Prabhupada set up a system that you could not directly approach him. Devotees couldn't just walk into Prabhupada's room and ask him questions. He would give darshans, and things like that, but he would go on morning walks, and even when he went on morning walks in Melbourne, each day he would go to the botanical gardens and do his walk. But they'd only take 10 or 15 devotees with him each time. It wasn't like all the devotees could just go. They'd take turns. One day was the Sankirtan devotees, one day was the temple devotees, like that. It was like different devotees would go with him. So that was the system. You couldn't just get to Prabhupada any time.
Right? Prabhupada was the leader of the movement, but he set up a system that you took instruction from his representatives, right? The temple presidents, the GBCs, right? The zonal representatives, the zonal secretaries. Now, that was Prabhupada's system. And devotees would write letters to Prabhupada. Prabhupada would say, consult your temple president and take it that he is speaking on my behalf. So that was the system. But in the early days, when there's only a few devotees, you could directly speak to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would write to you, and you could write back to Prabhupada. It was very intimate. And if you study the letters in the early part of the movement, Prabhupada continuously says, it's like a phrase that he uses repeatedly, he says, ISKCON will go on by love and trust. So that is the most important thing, especially when we're dealing with authority figures, and particularly in our society, because our society is meant to save the planet. We're meant to save this part of Melbourne, this part of the world. How many people are in our city?
5.
Is it 5 million? No, it's 4. I know it's 4+. Somewhere between 4 and 5 million people, right? So you see how many devotees are sitting here right now? Well, it's about 20 or 30 of us, right? So if you divide up those 5 million people, right, that means you're a guru for about 300,000 or 400,000 people. We're meant to save humanity. That's what Prabhupada said. ISKCON is meant to save the world. So we've got a long way to go, obviously. You know, to save the planet, there's a long, 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 long way to go. So what is the most important thing? The men sit on this side. What is the most important thing when you're a leader in the movement? Because each one of us is a leader. Prabhupada says there needs to be hundreds and thousands of gurus. In order for ISKCON to be successful, there has to be hundreds and thousands of us. It means you have to become a guru. Each devotee has to become a spiritual master. Each devotee has to become an authority. So how is it that we can progress in Krishna consciousness, that we can spread our movement? Then people have to have trust in us. Prabhupada says it goes on by love and trust. Devotees have to feel there's genuine love and trust between them, each other, and also between the leaders and them. And when devotees feel that there is trust, there is love between the leaders and the devotees, then the movement becomes powerful and people become inspired and they will do anything. When they feel there is genuine care coming from the leadership for the devotees, then they will be completely inspired by that leadership. So here it is being said that we need devotees who will take the role of spiritual master. Just like Surasrara Prabhu came through Melbourne, was it last year or the year before? And he gave his seminar. What was the name of the seminar? Yeah, Srila Prabhupada, the founder of Acharya. Right? So in that course, if you study that course, if you look at the lectures, I think many of you were there for the lectures, but you should study that course systematically. Then you'll see one of the overwhelming, overriding themes in the course is that we should, each one of us, become a spiritual master. It doesn't mean we'll become a Diksha Guru, necessarily, but it means that we will become a leader who will inspire others. So that is necessary that all of us take up that role because that is what the world needs. And that's what Prabhupada is saying here, that the system is that in order to receive spiritual knowledge or spiritual guidance or spiritual inspiration, you have to have a guru. That is, as Prabhupada calls, the parampara system. Krishna says this in Gita, evam parampara praptam imam rajashiyo vidu. He says this is how the science is passed on. Right? The science is passed on one way. And what is that? Right? Through parampara. No, there has to be a system. The link has to keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. And that is why our GBC and ISKCON, that is what they're setting up at this point in time. They're setting up a system so this movement will keep going on with strength for thousands of years to come. Because we see now what is taking place is that Prabhupada's followers are disappearing from the planet. Prabhupada himself has disappeared, and then his followers are now disappearing as well. We saw that when Jesus was on the planet, he had 12 main followers. right? The apostles, right? And then it was actually them who wrote down most of the teachings of Jesus. They were the ones who documented everything. They saw Jesus. They lived with him. They documented what he said and what he did. Right. So what we're seeing now is that the people who actually saw Prabhupada and actually lived with him and actually heard from him and understood his mood and his instructions, they're disappearing. So they're setting up a system in place now that it becomes very clear what Prabhupada's mood was and what he wanted as it goes on for thousands of years to come. Because this movement is meant to save Kali Yuga for thousands of years. Prabhupada said, he said, this movement will go down in history as having saved humanity in its darkest hour. That means all of you will save humanity in its darkest hour. All of you will become the gurus who save the earth. Swanston Street will be saved by you in its darkest hour. You will be the one who rises up and saves humanity when they are crumbling. So obviously that takes a great deal of purity. And we have to come to that level. That's what Prabhupada is expecting. So Prabhupada says that in the second part of the purport, pure devotees have prepared many books of knowledge on the basis of authorized scriptures. Srila Rupa Goswami and his assistants, under the instructions of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, have all written various literatures for the guidance of prospective devotees. And anyone who is very serious about raising himself to the standard of a pure devotee of the Lord must take advantage of those literatures. So this is how we understand. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, Prabhupada explains in the second chapter of the first canto. Prabhupada says there are two Bhagavats. One is the living Bhagavat, the person. The other one is the book Bhagavat. So we have to take advantage of both. Now we have to study the book Bhagavat, because the book Bhagavat is full of the personality, the Bhagavats. And by their association, we will become purified. And we will become pure devotees ourselves. Prabhupada, what is the best way to become a pure devotee in ISKCON? Right? It's to associate with Prabhupada through his books. It's to associate with the Bhagavatam itself. The literary incarnation of God. Right? And to associate with pure devotees. Advanced devotees. You have to find advanced devotees. I know when I joined ISKCON, we have to be very systematic. We have to be very particular about who we associate with. So when I joined ISKCON, I studied the different devotees. And I thought, yeah, I want to be like this devotee. I want to be like that devotee. I want to be like that devotee. And then I got their association. Just like my godbrother, Rupa Raghunath Prabhu. Any of you know Rupa Raghunath Prabhu? Yeah, he comes down here quite regularly. Well, sometimes. He comes down a few times a year. So he's a very inspiring devotee. I just saw him last week. So when I first joined, we used to have an Australia-wide festival at Mwulumbah, New Govardhan, once a year, between Christmas and New Year. And all the devotees from all over Australia would come there, and we'd have a national festival. We don't do that anymore. Mwulumbah kind of has a festival. Sydney has one. Melbourne has one. It's all broken up now, but it used to be very beneficial. We'd all come together and have a festival for about 3 or 4 days. So I'd heard about this devotee, Rupa Raghunath Prabhu, who's my godbrother, and I was very inspired to meet him. So then finally I got to the festival and then I met him. We had the kirtan on the first night, big kirtan. We all got there. We drove for 2 days on a bus from Melbourne to Mwulumbah, and then we got there at about 6 o'clock at night or something, and then we all just quickly took a shower and then ran to the temple and went there for the first Sanja Aarti. And Prabhav Prabhu, does anyone know Prabhav? Famous Mridanga player in ISKCON, like famous. He was initiated by Prabhupada when he was 12 years old. Very powerful. He's like one of the best Mridanga players in ISKCON. So he was leading the Sanja Aarti. And there's 30 plus brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, and everyone just packed into the temple. And we just, it was ecstatic kirtan. We're in ecstasy. Everyone was just dancing. I was in ecstasy. So then, after the kirtan, and then everyone was going around introducing themselves because, we hadn't met each other and everything like that. And then someone said, oh, this is Rupa Raghunath Prabhu. And I'd heard about him, my godbrother, and I wanted to be like him. So then, the next morning, after Bhagavatam class and the morning program, and then all the devotees were sitting down. There's hundreds of devotees there to sit down in lines to have prasadam. He didn't know, but I was following him around. Yeah, I was following. I was going to see, where's he going to sit? Where's he going to sit? And then he sat down, and I went and quickly sat next to him. And and he said, oh, Hare Krishna, I'm Rupa Raghunath. I said, I'm Keshav. And then like that. And then we spoke. And then I got his association. And then he inspired me greatly because I wanted to be like him. I like his mood in devotional service, his enthusiasm in devotional service, his determination. And I got a lot of his association over the years. Right? And he helped me as a devotee. He lifted me up. So we have to find association of advanced devotees. The Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. You have to choose your association. You have to study Prabhupada's books carefully and choose the association that you get. And then you can advance in Krishna consciousness. That is our system. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there are any questions or comments on what we have discussed. After Prabhupada?
Yeah.
Probably not. No, because Prabhupada is the Samstaka Acharya, the founder Acharya. So they keep. They did ask Prabhupada, they said, will there be another pure devotee who will come in ISKCON? And Prabhupada said, it could happen. It could happen. And then they asked Prabhupada, how will we recognize? And Prabhupada said, he will be self-luminous. So, you know, if another pure devotee comes, like Prabhupada, in ISKCON the next 10,000 years, then everyone will just recognize him, because he'll be so pure that everyone will just recognize that's the pure devotee. Already in ISKCON, we see we have so many pure devotees, so many advanced devotees who are there. But there won't be another person, like there won't be extra people on there. Like that. Any other question? Comment? That's okay. That's good. Yeah, I mean, if that's what you're doing, that's okay. Well, I know for a fact, I know some devotees are on Facebook, and that's not acceptable. Yeah, if you're taking notes, so please forgive me. I apologize. Then. Yeah, if you're taking notes, that's acceptable. Or maybe, like, you know, I think Nanda had the verse there in front of him. I hope you had the verse there. Had the verse there in front of him. You know, devotees, sometimes they're following the verse or they're doing like that. Or maybe, you can cross-reference maybe a bit. You know, like, you're in Prabhupada, you may be, you know, jumping over to the 11th canto to cross-reference something or like that. But I know for a fact that some devotees are on Facebook, and that's not acceptable. That's the wrong mood. You see them, you're like, you know, It's not the way Prabhupada expected us. It's not the, how would you say, the ethos. Ethos means the mood within the class. Because if devotees giving class, then you should be listening with rapt attention. That's the point. If I come to class, then I give my full attention to the devotee, out of respect. You know, and see, sometimes devotees come and they fall asleep. You know, they're just looking at you and they're just kind of like... Not very inspiring. Yeah. I don't do that to other devotees. Yeah, when I come to their class, I'm just going to... Because, you know, to give class means that, you know, it's not easy sometimes. Some devotees, you know, to give class, they find that a challenge. So you should support them and you should assist them. You know, and if you think you can do a better job, then you come give class. You know. So if devotees are giving class, then you should be attentive. That was Prabhupada's ethos. I mean, can you imagine if Prabhupada was here giving class and we're all like, you know, yeah, oh, Prabhupada, I'm following you on Facebook. You know, it's like, yeah, none of us would do that, like that. So we should not, yeah, if you're taking notes, that's fine. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to instruct like that. Or if you're following the verse, so I see sometimes the devotees are reading the verse on their phone, and that's fine. But I also know, like, I've seen devotees on Facebook, and that is not appropriate and it's not acceptable, actually. So that's what I was really emphasizing. So sorry if it was unimportant.
In our day-to-day interactions with devotees,
and
sometimes wondering if you could expand a little bit more on
us. So Rupa Goswami's teachings are there in Upadeshamrita and Nectar of Instruction. So six loving exchanges. It's called Priti Lakshana. Lakshana means like an ornament. Priti means of love, affection. So how do we express love and affection? Then you give prasada. Yeah. And then you accept prasada. So it's like everyone has their favorite type of prasad. Right? What's my favorite type? Yeah, gulab jamuns. And? Come on, bhakti. No, khichdi is for health. I don't know. Khichdi is like... Yeah, if I'm about to leave my shrikam like that. So if I'm about to leave my body, I'm not going to say, "Can you give me some khichdi?" You know, like, my final meal, I just want some khichdi. No. Yeah, if I'm about to leave my body, I'll say, "Can you give me gulab jamuns? Can you give me shrikam?" And I drove up from the farm last night. I stayed with Krishna Kataprabhu. So I walked in, and then I walked up. I was fasting yesterday. I did, because I try to fast once a week. It's very good for the health to fast. So then I walked in upstairs, and then they're all sitting there. And Ma, you know, Leela Gata, she's there, and she had like mango juice, just like, you know, pureed 10 mangoes. It was just like pure mango juice. She goes, "Do you want some?" And I said, "I'm fasting today." You know, and she's so insistent, "Come on." And she broke me down. You know, she like destroyed my posterity. So then I had a cup of mango juice. I was like, wow, it's like amazing, you know. And then Sri Yashoda had made this meringue, you know, which is hard to make. It's a rare thing to make. It's very hard to make meringue without eggs. So she made this meringue. And it had raspberry and coconut and like a lemon flavor in the meringue. It was amazing. So they're all sitting there eating. And yeah, Ma's going, "Come on, have some. I said, "No, I'm fasting. And then I just fell down. I couldn't control my senses. So, you know, she came, it was like heavenly. It was like, you know, it was the most amazing thing I practically ever tasted, like that. So, what was my point? Was it talking? Very good. So how do we cultivate love between the devotees? Right? It is by giving prasad. So you know the devotee likes a particular type of, you know, I like gulab jamuns. Right? So if you want to capture my heart, or you just walk up to me in the middle of the courtyard and say, "Here's some gulab jamuns." And I'll be your best friend for the rest of your life. Yeah, that's a fact. Everyone knows. Like on Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, you know, last year, you know, they make gulab jamuns. And then I was walking, you know, through the line, and devotees were walking with their plates, you know, lined up there, and they had gulab jamuns on their plates. So as I'm walking past, I'm taking gulab jamuns off their plates and just eating. Yeah. Like that. Completely uncontrolled. And devotees know. They know that's what he likes. So some people kind of like, you know, okay. Other people are like, what are you doing? So this is the point. If you want to develop your relationship with devotees, then you give prasad and you receive prasad. Right? You reveal your mind in confidence. And you inquire confidentially. Right? And you give a gift and you receive a gift. So this is how we cultivate relationships like that. So if you want to cultivate relationships, start doing these things. We don't do it enough, actually. And that's why a relationship... If we feel like... Sometimes devotees feel like even in ISKCON, which is supposed to be the most personalistic movement on the planet, sometimes devotees feel it's a little sterile and feeling actually quite lonely. And some devotees say, "No, I actually feel lonely." You know, so then start cultivating these qualities. Start giving devotees prasadam and giving them gifts and inquiring confidentially. And suddenly you'll feel your life will change. And the devotees will reciprocate with you. I'll do that. So you have to do this. Is that okay?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Just inquiring, since we are on the topic of having a parampara system and having a guru, living guru. Besides the formal or standard prerequisites of getting initiation and having a guru, how do we know internally if we are true to ourselves that we are ready to have a guru, a living guru, like through the formal process of initiation, and how do we pray to Krishna to reveal the, you know, the right meaning, the guru that will match your wavelength or that's suitable for
you? No, Krishna will send the guru, that's not a problem. Mm-hmm. Krishna will send you the guru when you're ready, then Krishna will send the spiritual master. You should, you don't have to worry about, you know, who is the guru, that will come. Krishna will just send. But you have to be ready from your side. And that's why, generally, Haridas Thakur says that when you approach the guru for initiation, then he will test you for 1 year. And some gurus test you for longer. You know, I know Burajan Prabhu, you know, sometimes he makes the devotees wait 7-8 years before he gives them initiation. He's testing them. You know, not that I just give it to you straight away. So the guru will test you. So first of all, we have to see, are you steady in devotional service? So from your side, you have to be steady. Are you chanting 16 rounds every day? You know, are you following the four regulative principles? Are you reading Prabhupada's books? You know, some gurus ask their disciples to chant 25 rounds on a Kaddishah. Some gurus. You know. So there's different... The guru is testing you. So you have to see, are you steady? So from your side, you have to see, can I maintain this for the rest of my life? It's easy to maintain it for a short amount of time. We can all maintain it for a few months. That's no problem. But can you maintain it for the rest of your life? Will you still be an enthusiastic devotee decade after decade after decade? That's not so easy. Because you see, there's not lots of senior devotees here right now. You know, who in this room has been practicing Krishna consciousness for more than 20 years? You know, I think there's one person I can say. You know, there's not many devotees who stay around for a long, long, long period of time, enthusiastically and engaged. So you have to see, are you able to do that? Then you're ready for initiation.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other question?
Can you explain why that happens? Because it's described this path as blissful. So why, after 20 years, many devotees have been able to stay?
Yeah, because the path is described in both ways. Prabhupada says it is undoubtedly difficult. He says that in his book. He said, undoubtedly difficult to go back to Godhead. Not easy. But then Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, it's just blissful. So your challenge is to stay blissful for your whole life, through all the challenges, because life will throw things at you. You know? Life will throw things. Because when you're a young devotee, you know, Krishna's not going to test you a lot when you're a young devotee because you're not ready for it. You know, but as you get older as a devotee, Krishna tests you. I remember Burajan Prabhu said to me, he's my main Shiksha Guru, especially now that my spiritual master's left the planet. My Diksha Guru has left the planet. So Burajan Prabhu said to me, it was about 1993, so I've been a devotee for about 4 years, right? And he said to me, Krishna sends tests. And I was just looking at him, you know, with my blissful, ecstatic, you know, brahmachari countenance. And I'm just looking at him. And he goes, Krishna hasn't done that to you yet. I didn't even know what he was talking about. I thought, oh, you know, just it's all blissful, you know. And then 3 years later, suddenly, bang, you know, we start getting tested. Yeah. So then and Krishna tests you a lot as time goes by. As a devotee, he really tests you like that. So it is easy, right? It is blissful, but simultaneously, right? It is challenging. It's not devotional service is challenging, it's more that the material world is challenging. That's the point.
So how to keep us protected that we don't get overcome by these tests?
Follow the process. Follow the process. Go for Mangalati. Chant your rounds early. Stay awake. Come to the Bhagavatam class. Do all those things. And get ready, because you know, most devotees become grihast. Most of us become grihasta. Right? Some won't. Some will be stay brahmachari. But it's rare. But most of us become grihasta. So that's when the challenge comes. That's why, you know, when you're brahmachari, like Prabhupada said, brahmachari, brahmacharini life, that's the best life. Yeah, you really have. It's not complicated. Right? That, but if people get married, that's when it becomes challenging. Because then, you know, it's not easy to follow the full morning program all the time. And there's, you know, life pulls on you from so many different directions. So that's when it becomes very difficult and challenging for devotees. So I know for myself, you know, I've been a devotee for about 25 years, but I was a brahmachari for 8 years. And those 8 years, because, you know, I tried to focus in those 8 years of brahmachari, that's still carrying me now, you know, over the long term. I still go, that was that foundation that carries me. So brahmachari, brahmacharini training is meant to build a foundation so that you'll be carried for the rest of your life, because it's not easy when you enter into other ashrams. You know, that's when the tests really come, because you're interfacing with the material energy. And Prabhupada said, he had, back in 1974, 5, 6, right, you know, early days of our movement, they had the Radha Damodar traveling bus party, which you must have heard of, famous. Right? And they're all brahmacharis. So the bus came, Prabhupada was there, they all came to have darshan, and Prabhupada was like 40 of them, brahmacharis, like really fired up brahmacharis. And Prabhupada gave this whole lecture about staying brahmachari. He said, this is the best life. And he said women just want babies, bangles, and saris. You know, you listen to this lecture, Prabhupada's like heavy, you know. He said, you know, they just want babies, bangles, and saris. And Prabhupada's like, you know. And everyone's like, yeah, fired up, yeah, Prabhupada, we're going to be brahmachari. And you know how many of them maintained celibacy for the rest of their life? One. All the rest of them got married and did their things. And, you know. So it's easy, you know, when we're in thinking, yeah, let's do it for our whole life, but, you know, practically. So then, you know, if, you know, most devotees will change. They'll go through Grihastha Ashram, which means they'll go into interface with the material energy. So you have to be ready. Because you understand, when you step onto the battlefield, Prabhupada said we're declaring war with Maya. So when you step onto the battlefield, which Grihastha life is like that in one sense, because you're really in the material energy again, you have to be ready. That's what the brahmachari, brahmacharini training is for. So that you will not collapse. So that you can maintain yourself. Because the Bhagavatam says it's like going down a well, bottom of a deep, dark well. One of my best friends, Atul Krishna Prabhu, I think he's coming here soon. He's a very advanced devotee. So, you know, I got married in January, remarried again. And then I wrote to him, he's a very good friend. And I, you know, when I sent the email, I said, from the bottom of the well. So I'm back down the well now. I'm like, oh my God. I'm stuck. It's like, and I had the chance to get out. I had the chance to get out, to analyze myself. I had to look very carefully at my, because that's what we do when we read the Bhagavatam very carefully, because I study the Bhagavatam carefully. So I had to look at myself, am I ready for renunciation? And I said, no, I'm not ready. So I had to go back into the well. You know, I was almost out. I was almost like back to the spiritual world with Krishna. Yeah, and then I turned around and I said to Krishna, I can't do it yet. I jumped back down the well, now I'm stuck down this well. So I pray all the devotees throw me a rope and bring me back out of the well. I'm just joking around. Grihastha life, that's fine. It's fine if you're Krishna conscious. That's the point. Grihastha life is not an impediment to advancing Krishna consciousness. There's no impediment to being a Grihastha. There's no problem with being a Grihastha if you're Krishna conscious. If you're not Krishna conscious, then good luck.
And it's written in the Gita, also Krishna has said in the Gita that among the hundreds and thousands who come to me, hardly one knows me in truth. Isn't it? There's a verse like that. So it is difficult overall. It is a difficult process, but we just can't give up.
Yeah, you don't have any choice. You can't give up because then you're back in the material world again. So. Mm-hmm. Any other points? Questions? Yep.
Did you mention when you read this now, attachment at point? I'm not from Malaysia. Back in Malaysia, Rhythmics, there is a Rhythmic organization there. In fact, in Penang Island, on the mainland island, there are two temples being built currently. One is by ISKCON and one by Rhythmic. And somehow Rhythmic, yes, I agree with them stopping at the Parampara, just like the six, you know. Stop like Guru Gobind Singh and all that. So, but somehow I see that what they're doing is actually very successful, despite the stoppage in the lineage, you know. Do we have Rhythmic in Melbourne as well?
It's not so big in Melbourne. Melbourne's not so big. Not so big.
Madhu Pandit was Prabhupada's, was Jayapataka Swami's disciple. he's the one who went down to Bangalore and started the retreat, right?
Yeah.
And how are they doing in Bangalore? Have they managed to get win the case?
Yeah, we won the case. ISKCON won the case.
ISKCON won the case. So he's still in Bangalore?
They have their own place now. Yeah, they took their own place. The point is that we should not deviate. Because if Prabhupada wanted, and on May the 27th, 1977, before Prabhupada left the world, Prabhupada said, if you have any questions concerning when I am gone, he said, come and ask me now. So they came and asked Prabhupada. And they said, what will happen in terms of initiation after you leave the planet? And Prabhupada clearly said, there will be disciples of the disciples. He says it. It's all recorded like that. So if Prabhupada wanted that devotees, it was all going to stop at him, he would have clearly said that. He would have said it, clearly. He would have said, okay, this is it. No more initiations. You do initiations, but everyone's my disciple now. He didn't clearly say that. And if you look back at his conversations over those 12 years that he was with us, the recorded conversations, in Iraq, I think it is, or Iran, I think Iraq, Prabhupada's there, and one reporter comes to Prabhupada, and he says, what will happen when you leave? People ask Prabhupada this question. It wasn't like it wasn't asked. And Prabhupada said, they will become the gurus. Prabhupada says it. Like it's there. So what, he changed his mind in 1977, the last few days, or few months, or 10 minutes. You know, there was never any clear, you know, he would have just said, clearly, right, this is it, from now on, it's just me. He never said that. It wasn't consistent with what he said when he was with us. And in the final conversation, when they asked Prabhupada on May the 27th, you know, they said there's five questions they asked him about when he was not going to be here. One was about the BBT, one was about the guru situation. And Prabhupada said, disciple of disciple. And it was clear. Everyone walked out of the room, everyone was clear what the system was. So that's the way it is. So we should not deviate. Even though sometimes we lose faith. The reason the Ritviks have done that, because they lost faith after Prabhupada left, there were some problems.
Yes.
So that's why. And it's not invalid that they have lost some faith. It's not invalid because there were problems. But it doesn't mean we change the system. Right? And now you see the gurus in ISKCON, by and large, they're very fixed up.
Yeah,
it's very good now. The system's yeah, and even you'll see in the future there'll be more problems. It's not like all the problems are gone. Occasionally there'll be, one of the gurus will fall down, or yeah, even in Australia a couple of years ago, the GBC, he left his sannyas position. You know, so there's still going to be problems. There's always going to be problems because we're in the material world. Prabhupada says that. So, but it doesn't mean we change Prabhupada's system. That's the point. Okay, that's good. We'll stop here now. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.